When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love. My next guest, Hannah Jury, is a very dear friend of mine. We're actually each other's bridesmaids. Hannah is such a powerhouse. She's the founder of Peppermint Grove and Moss Street Fragrances, which is stocked literally everywhere, including Maya, Bloomingdale's, and Galeries Lafayette. You go into any store that has a home fragrance section, you'll see one of her brands. Not only this, she also white labels, as in manufactures for a lot of other brands in the industry. Hannah's built this to be a $40 million business, but then tragedy struck at COVID when she lost control of her supply chain. This was a pretty tough time that we lived through together, but she picked herself right back up and turned lemons into lemonade. She seized on the opportunity and started making hand sanitizers. And it was also the catalyst to really focus on her e-com business. But the major turning point was the vertical integration of her business into the expansion of her perfumery business, which now has 5,000 fragrances in the fragrances library and is achieving incredible double-figure growth year on year. Of course, I always love chatting to this girl. You may need to turn down the volume because she is one of the few people in this world that's louder than me. But you will absolutely love our chat. All right, let's get into it. It's Hannah!
Yay! Uh-huh. Thank you so much for that introduction. Yay. I'm so excited to be here. I know you've been trying to get me on. I had a baby and a few things went on.
I think I asked you why you were like very heavily pregnant last time.
Yes, and I was like, I don't want to go into labor on the podcast. That's a little bit gross. And so anyway, we're here now. I'm so pumped.
Just be warned that we might not finish every conversation. That's how we chat.
It's organized chaos.
Exactly.
I feel like we always get to the point eventually, but there's so much to say. I love about us, I mean, I love a lot of things, and I'm sure there's a small time frame on this, but is we do such different things. We both have awesome businesses, but they are so different. We'll obviously get into that. You are obviously like e-commerce queen, PR, marketing, like, and then I'm a manufacturer and wholesaler. It's not as glamorous, but I am starting to get into your world.
Oh my God, yes. When Hannah pivoted into e-com, obviously like with in jest, she was like, you just get the money up front?
I couldn't
believe
it.
The money's in the bank?
I couldn't believe it. I was just like, one, I'm getting like double the amount of money I get for one product. And also like the money is just there. I'm used to getting like 60, 90 days, EOM, chasing accounts. Like it is just a different world. It just opens up a whole new world for me. So it's awesome. It's been fantastic.
Well, this is also super exciting because I don't think we've had many people in manufacturing directly. So that's awesome.
Well, it's not as glamorous. And I think people in manufacturing don't do as much PR in terms of themselves and talking about their businesses. We definitely need to, because I tell you what, like a big piece of machinery gets me excited, but you know, you kind of feel like, you know, it definitely doesn't sound as cool as other things.
It's a smaller pool of like, it's being B2B, business to business.
Yes.
Smaller pool of people that are like interested.
Exactly. But hopefully I can get people interested today. That's the point, right?
I think you like make manufacturing sexy.
Oh, hopefully. We'll see.
Should we talk about how we met?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good story.
Yeah. Waldy worked at Uber. One of the guys at his work is dating or married now to Poppy Lisserman.
Mm.
And then so I went to an Uber event and I met this like blonde bombshell in the bathroom and we hit it off. And I was like, oh my God, you must be Poppy.
Waldie's like work twins, like
yes, the boys did the same thing at Uber. They literally did the same job at Uber, one for rides and one for eats. And they were like, oh, so my name's Hannah Jane, you're obviously Jane.
Yeah.
It was just this whole connection. And then we met, you originally thought I was Poppy, who is fabulous. That's a massive compliment. Thank you, but I'm not. From there, I was like, no, I'm Hannah, and we have been friends ever since.
Yeah.
It was very easy.
It was just like that. Yeah. Just like that.
It's been great.
Where does your like journey start?
The story begins 11 years ago. I finished school. I went to uni, but I did full-time work and full-time uni. I've always been a workhorse. I love working. I love being independent. It was just something that I adored doing. A uni degree was just a box I needed to tick because I knew it was important for longer-term opportunities. But it didn't really excite me, to be quite honest. And I found it quite easy. It was one of those things where I was like, yeah, cool. Like, we've got to sit in exams and do that sort of stuff. By the way, I'm by no means an academic. Let's be clear on that. But, you know, I found working really gave me that real excitement. Graduated, went and worked for a marketing communications agency. And then I decided to start my own thing. So I was working in a fragrance business whilst I was at uni, and I absolutely fell in love with fragrance. There are so many things I love about fragrance, but one is I just love how it elicits such emotion. Like, I'm quite an over the top person. Like, I'm quite dramatic. I know, ridiculous. But I love that you can smell someone and you can be like, oh my gosh, I absolutely love what you're wearing. Or you're like, oh, I don't really like that. Or it just has the ability to transport people to elicit such emotion, you know? And I really love that. You know, my sister, she once dated this guy that wore the same cologne as my dad. And she's like, I literally can't date you. I can't kiss you because I feel like I'm kissing my dad.
I think they say that's the actually strongest like memory sense.
Yeah,
like
This olfactory, is something. Olfactory. Yeah, exactly right. It's such a beautiful thing. So I just think fragrance, I fell in love with it. I worked in the industry. I then went and worked for a marketing communications agency where I was marketing things like chocolate, and like I just wasn't passionate about it. And so I just couldn't get into it. So then I decided that I wanted to go back into fragrance. And the whole thing came about for two reasons. One, at the time, and this was now 11 years ago, yes, there were a lot of candles on the market, but I found that the actual vessels that they were housed in, they weren't that attractive. You know, I was like, just because something is functional, i.e. smells good, doesn't mean that it shouldn't also be, you know, aesthetically pleasing, like an add to the aesthetics of the home. I'm really into home decor and home and this kind of thing. And, you know, I really wanted something that was actually a piece of home decor in its own right. So I went about designing the actual vessel, and this is how Peppermint Grove was born. Now, when I was trying to find my suppliers, I flew into Hong Kong to then go over to Shenzhen to find suppliers and start that whole process. And there was this line that was, oh my gosh, it would have been like 300 meters long. And I was like, what the hell are people lining up for? What is this? Turns out it was when Dior or one of those high-end fragrance brands were personalizing the bottles of fragrance with people's names. I was like, this is so cool. Like, people are lining up to get their name on their perfume bottle. I mean, just in case they forget it. I don't know, but I love that. And so I was like, I need to incorporate the element of personalization into the home decor space. Mm-hmm. And nobody was doing it at the time. They're actually still not. I'm surprised. But I wanted to bring that into the design, which I ended up bringing in the design of the lid in a way that was going to be scalable. It's all very well that you can get someone to write something on a candle or paint something, but I've done it in a way that it's actually scalable with a certain machine, which is so awesome that we now have 20 of them, that we have activations in different stores. That's how the whole thing came about. So that was Peppermint Grove. Now it's 10 years old. So in terms of when I sent out the first order is 10 years ago in October.
Wow.
And then I launched Moss Street Fragrances 4 years ago. And then 2 years ago, I vertically integrated into producing my biggest raw material, which is the actual fragrance. And I now have a perfumery, which supplies the market with fragrance and also my brands as well. So it's a bit of an ecosystem.
Oh my God, it's so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When did you decide, okay, I'm going to do this?
It
because lots of people, you know, there's quite a few, lots of people start like candle businesses.
Agreed.
They're probably the, you know, I think the entry level one is just to have your own default vessel. How did you then go, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to go and like, it would be so much more manufacturing to actually create the vessel.
Yeah, because you have to have a mold. Firstly, it was finding the right supplier that I could work with. So that's why I was over in China. I went over to the trade shows. I found a supplier that I really liked and trusted. Worked with him on designing so the 3D mold, like the 3D print, which then became the mold, which then became the design for the vessel. So I worked with him on the vessel. I knew that I couldn't just bring out something that everybody else was doing, because the whole reason I was doing it was to be different and to solve my problem, which was that I couldn't find a candle or a diffuser that was actually nice. You know, it was kind of looked a little bit like a Vegemite jar with a logo slapped on it. I didn't want to do that. So there was no point in me then going and doing the same thing. I had to be different. So for me, it was finding the supplier, working on the drawings and the designs, and then going for it with my first run of vessels, and then pouring the candles myself, wow, choosing the fragrances, choosing the packaging, going from there. But it was a long process in terms of designing it. I worked on the business 9 to 12 months before I actually launched.
Wow. Were you working at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was working full time. I was working in the marketing communications agency. I was working on the business in the evenings. I was working on it on weekends. I was working on it every moment I could get. I only quit my full time job about 2 months before I launched, because I knew I had a viable business, and I'll tell you why. I knew that I wasn't going to be online. So I was talking to a lot of the independent retailers whilst I was developing my business. So I was working on a business plan. And, you know, when I say business plan, was it all written down in a beautiful presentation? Absolutely not. You know, it was in a notebook. I knew that I wanted to sell through retailers. And the reason being was, to be fair, I didn't know much about online, but also was at a time when a lot of the independent retailers were really scared of online, because a lot of their suppliers were going online and they really felt like they were competing with them, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to start this business. I'm not going to go online. One, because, you know, that will give me a good in with these beautiful retail stores. But also, it was a product that people needed to feel and touch and smell. And, you know, I needed it to be in the retail store so that they could act as my influencers in the marketplace.
Yeah. And when the people don't know your brand, they're not like going online to find it. They're like, a candle is a thing when you're out shopping, you're like, oh, this is nice.
Absolutely.
I want to get it. Yeah.
Absolutely. So from there, I went and made a list of all of the retail stores that I wanted to be in, right, in each state. And because I knew that if I got it into the right retailers, right, the it stores, the influencers of the homewares retail space, that the rest would follow suit. And that's because that's exactly what happens. You have like two or three stunning stores in each city, and then everybody else kind of goes, if it's in that store, then, you know, it must be fabulous.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to work with them.
That's very clever. How did you get into them?
I just went in and said hello. You know me, Jen. Yeah. I love a chat.
Hannah talks to anyone. And we're like, we're on a group trip. Where's she going? She's talking to that person.
Look, I genuinely feel passionate about people. I really love people. I love their stories. You never know what you might learn from somebody. And I genuinely like chatting to people. So I went into these stores. I started chatting to the owners, or, you know, the shop assistants or whoever, started talking to them, what's selling, what's not selling. And from there, I said, well, can I tell you about this idea I've got? I showed them the sketches, the drawings. The first lot of packaging, I actually showed a couple of stores, and a lot of them gave me incredible feedback, which was absolutely not.
Oh,
so they
really
loved the vessel, but the packaging was quite polarizing. It was very wild. It had these wild patterns. And they said, look, it's hard for us to merchandise in store and for it to look really pretty. It was before anybody had gotten on this pastel trend. We were the first ones who went in with this really beautiful, neutral, pastel-y sort of palette. So from there, I actually ended up completely changing the box design. But because I'd worked with all of these retailers throughout this process of developing the brand, of course they took the brand on. I developed it based off all of their feedback. So
You brought them on the journey. That's so clever.
And people love to feel like they're part of something. And these incredible men and women who had been in the industry for 20 years had never had someone come to them and be like, hey, you guys are our eyes and ears. Like, you guys are the ones selling the product. You help me build a brand? And so they loved it and they genuinely enjoyed it because they're passionate about the industry. So from there, I knew that I was going to sell. So I'd already, before I'd even officially launched, I had probably 20 retailers that were taking the brand on, which was amazing. And then from when it went into store, it was like it was incredible. But I also did a consignment model for other stores.
So it's no risk, which basically means they don't have to pay you until it sells.
Correct. Right? Because I went in and I knew it was going to sell, and they'd say, oh, like, I really love it. It's really beautiful. No one's really doing anything like it. But, you know, I just don't have the money, or, oh, it's risk. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to take the risk out of it. Like, no worries. If it doesn't sell, I'll take it back. And of the 50, 60 stores that I did that for, I only took back one. One lot. Every other store it sold and they ordered again. So it kind of took off pretty quickly in that wholesale place from when I launched. So I quit my job. I moved back home with my mum and dad.
Oh, no.
The rest is history.
To launch the business, how did you get the funding for that? And then how has the cash flow journey been since?
I'm trying to entice the audiences into how sexy manufacturing is. Not talk too much about cash flow, but we'll talk about branding after this. $50,000 I had worked during high school, all through uni, and I had saved. So I had $50,000 to start the business. And from there, it was cash flow positive. And I say that with the retainer of with very good relationships with my suppliers. So I was very lucky in that a lot of my suppliers gave me really good terms, like 30, 60, 90 days. And if I was a little late, I'd pick up the phone and say, you know, can I have another 30 days? But cash flow has been tight since day one. It is still tight. I am 10 years in and it is still tight. And the reason is this.
It's because you're growing and it's tied up in inventory and you have to pay up front.
Growing businesses eat money. Yes. This is what people don't understand. And when you're in manufacturing, right, you have to fund all stages of new product development from idea through to fruition. So what people don't understand is that I might have to buy, like, let's take something very simple, like a raw material, like of a glass jar. I might buy that, right? I then have to manufacture that into something, right? And then I might sell it to, say, Maya, who then don't pay for 90 days end of months, right? It is 9 to 12 months between me buying that first raw material and me actually getting the money in my bank account for the finished good that onsold to a retail store. So it's a 9 to 12 month cash flow cycle. And when you're growing as aggressively as I have been for 10 years, you can see how people get into trouble. That's why I'm obsessed with it. Cash flow, cash flow, cash flow.
Yeah.
Because you can get into trouble. You can have an incredibly successful business, but yet you can find yourself in trouble. It's really easy to do.
Yeah. And even for like show probing an econ business, like I'm like the worst accountant. I don't think I really thought about cash flow too much because it was growing and with the money in the bank.
Correct.
Situation. And then much lower minimum order quantities until COVID hit.
Yeah.
And then all this money was trapped in stock.
Yep.
And then stock that wasn't moving. I'm an accountant, but I think that's the first time it really hit me. Like, oh my God, cash is king. That's why they say this. It really is.
Absolutely. It's just one of those things where it's so easy for it to happen. I see it happening. And when I see some incredible brands, especially lately, I mean, retail's bloody tough. We know that, right? Yeah. We're seeing amazing brands and amazing businesses going into receivership left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic businesses. And my friends who aren't in business say to me, my goodness, I can't believe it shut down. That's such a good brand. And I'm just like, I can see how it can happen. Yeah. Like, especially if your forecasting's out, you buy way too much stock. It happened a lot, especially in my industry, you know, during COVID, and I hate saying that word, but everybody was investing in their homes. And so a lot of these homewares businesses, which went absolutely gangbusters during that time, bought all that stock expecting that they would have that level of growth. And then of course, people stopped spending money when we got out of lockdown and said, they were traveling and eating out and doing all these things, which those industries desperately needed. And then they were left with these huge bills of stock that they couldn't sell. And you get how it can happen. It's a really tight balance between having enough inventory and, you know, having too much where you actually just can't sell it and you get yourself into trouble.
What's your number one advice?
I think the first thing is surround yourself with people that you trust and people that treat your money and your business as if it was their own, right? So my...
That's what Waldy always says,
Like my CFO, who has worked for me for 8 or 9 years, like he has been there pretty much since the beginning. I hired him. He was like my fourth or fifth hire, right? So like maybe 18 months in, he is incredible. He was way too qualified for the job, but he'd recently moved here from another country. And anyway, he stepped into the business. He was used to managing like multi-billion dollar businesses, stepped into mine. So he could have done it, obviously standing on his head, but he's been incredible. I call him money bags. We have a great relationship. But honestly, trying to get money out of that man is like pulling blood from a stone. But I love it. Like I say to him, excuse me, can I have money for this? And he makes me work for it. And I love that because you know what? He treats it as if it's his own money. And if I'm struggling to get it, other people are struggling to get it. And that's great. He protects it. And all of my leadership team, they act as if they are owners in the business. And I absolutely love it. They care. They're passionate. Just surround yourself with the right people, especially when it comes to cash flow. People who are not just going to treat your money like it's paper money and that it grows on trees. Like that is one of the most important things that I can say with cash flow. And of course, always be checking it yourself. Every single day, 8 a.m., I'm looking at the cash flow. I'm obsessed with it. Absolutely obsessed. I've got to be.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's really good advice because I feel like the few times where we've really just made the wrong decision,
mm-hmm.
it's like people clearly wanting to kind of build their resume
mm-hmm.
With like zero regard for
the responsibility. And then it is real money. And people sometimes think it's play money. I think sometimes people look in the books and the balance sheet and all that and they're just like, oh, this is so fun. And you're like, no, this is actually real, you know? And I feel a huge responsibility. Like, you know, I have 120 staff. I have to pay these people every fortnight. They have to pay their bills. Like mm-hmm. they have children to feed. Like that is a huge responsibility. If I don't have that money in the bank account, people can't feed their families. Like I take that really seriously. So it's a big responsibility and something that I'm obsessed with, as you know.
And so how, oh my God, assistant Caitlin has come in with glasses of Prosecco. You're the best.
Oh my goodness.
Oh
thank
my God.
Thank you so much. Yay. Ice? Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Cheers. This feels very nice. Thank you. It's gone down quite nicely, this first sip.
So good. How did you get into manufacturing yourself?
Mm-hmm. The barriers to entry in terms of making a candle or a diffuser, they aren't high. Like it's like the barriers to entry are very low. It is easy to buy. Like for instance, obviously I went bespoke in terms of my vessel, but you can buy vessels off the internet and fragrance and wax and wicks and all these sorts of things, right? There are so many makers and hobbyists who make candles and diffusers for a living or for, you know, a hobby. So the barriers to entry are quite low. Obviously, I decided to go the different route and do something really custom because I really invested it and really wanted it to be a big business. From day dot. I didn't want to outsource it. One, the extra money of outsourcing it. Like manufacturing in Australia, it is expensive, as we know. So I just wanted to make it myself. It wasn't difficult to make the end product. So it was just something I wanted to do. Now, of course, when you start, you're making 50 candles, you know, then you don't think, oh, I'm going to now be doing production runs of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 candles in a day. I started really small and from there I scaled and a lot of people go, oh, I'm now scaling and I'm going to outsource that. I just never wanted to. I wanted to own my production as much of the supply chain as I could from the beginning. It just wasn't an option for me. And now when you say that, I always say to you, Jane, my next business, I'm not going to be manufacturing. I'm going to be buying in the product and it's going to be finished. And, you know, I'm not going to be dealing with raw materials and this and that. But I just love it at the end of the day. And I love that I have full control over that process. And that's why I'm trying to own as much of my supply chain as possible. And that's why I've vertically integrated into producing my own wax and wicks and perfumes and fragrance. And then that kind of became a business in its own right, which is really exciting. I kind of fell into it. I just love it. It's just something I really enjoy.
How do you even start a factory?
We're now going to go back to 10 years ago. So I told you that I moved home. I made the first batch in my parents' house. And so very,
you're pouring wax into this vessel that you got from China.
In the kitchen. Yeah, exactly right. So I've got my vessels. I've got my fragrance. I used a local fragrance house. They were based in Adelaide. I made the first batch in my kitchen really, really easy. And very, very quickly, I needed to move out. Now, here's the problem. I couldn't afford, I had invested all of my money into stock and into this damn vessel, right? So I actually didn't have the money to have some fancy factory. Let's just be very clear there, right? But I did need a space. I needed a commercial space. So I looked outside of Sydney. I couldn't afford something in Sydney. There's big, obviously, commercial areas in Campbelltown and out west, and there's all these incredible places. I couldn't afford that. Like, it wasn't a possibility for me. So I went to the Southern Highlands. So it's about an hour and a half out of Sydney. So it's almost like, it's not quite halfway between Sydney and Canberra, but it's a little, you know, not as far. It's about an hour and a half, an hour and 45. So I found a small commercial space. I only hired half of it. The other half at the time actually was like a storage space. And this is a weird fun fact. They were storing a Camilla Queen of the Desert, that movie, and there's that huge shoe that was in the warehouse. And I've got to be honest, I kind of walked in and saw this huge shoe.
This is a sign.
And I was like, this is a sign. I'm hopefully going to be successful, or I'm going to end up, I don't know, maybe like doing something weird, but whatever. There's a big sparkly shoe. So I literally got this small space, and then I got a demountable, Jane Lou.
Oh,
and
my
God. And I dumped it. And that was my office cum occasional sleeping quarters.
Oh, my God.
Because it was an hour and 45 minutes away from my house.
A demountable, by the way, it's like when you guys see like a work site.
Yeah.
I only know what it is because our school got like hailed and we had to work out of demountables. But not like,
it's not glamorous.
Southern Highlands is cold as well.
Really cold, but they have those heaters in them. Right. So it had this heater. So yes, it was absolutely freezing. And I had a demountable, which I dumped a desk in. It did have a heater, thank God. And I literally worked out of that. Now, I worked out of that for like 2 years.
Wow.
So as I scaled the shoe and the other storage things, they ended up moving out. I ended up taking the whole thing over, but it still wasn't huge by any means. I'm now in a much larger space just down the road. I've still got my factory there in the Southern Highlands because I built an incredible team. It's a third of the price per square meter to be outside of Sydney. And the other thing was, and this is the other reason I did it, was it's considered rural, right? So there were government incentives for hiring staff. So I knew that if I started out there, that the moment I needed to hire my first staff member, which was quite quickly, I actually went to one of the government agencies and they actually sent me staff, and the government actually like co-funded because they needed to create jobs and I was creating jobs.
That's amazing.
So it seems nuts and everyone thinks, oh, are you a barrel girl? No, I'm not. I did not know anyone. I met people pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm sure I know.
I love a chat. That's kind of how it all started.
And you were like crashing there, like sleeping in like pubs and like.
Yeah. So there was the.
Not in the pub, like in the hotel pub.
But those dodgy rooms where you share a bathroom. Yeah, absolutely. That was a treat, Jane. Like if I could do that. After 9 months, I was able to afford a small apartment. Just a little apartment like in the Southern Highlands. So I would live there Monday to Friday and then I would come back Friday night or a Saturday morning and have Saturday and Sunday in Sydney and then I'd go back again. And I did that for like 4 years. Met James, my now husband, then and we would literally see each other on Saturday and Sunday. That was it, because during the week I was living this weird life in the Southern Highlands where I was just working and working and working and working and working. Wow. Yeah.
This is why I do admire people who start businesses like later in life with kids, because you can do those things. You hustle when you're younger. You don't even realize. I'm not like promoting hustle culture, but at the time you're like, it's kind of exciting. This is like the...
Yeah.
You don't even realize this is your journey, right?
Absolutely. And it's actually a really selfish existence. And I'll really happily say that.
And you can be selfish.
You can be selfish. And I was very selfish.
And I would love to be more selfish and sleep in a pub.
Not now. But when I met James, like I said to him, because I really wasn't planning on meeting someone and he quite literally fell into my life and he's never left, which is incredible. I said to him, like, my business is my number one priority. You will not see me Monday to Friday. I can't do this whole needy thing. If you're saying, oh, I need you to come back on a Wednesday. No, you will annoy me because I'm really focused on what it is that I need to do. And that was it. And that was literally the first 4 years. Then it got to the stage where I built my team enough that I was there 3 days a week or 2 days a week. And then, you know, now we've got a marketing and creative office literally, you know, down the road from you, you know, here in, you know, Surry Hills. So that's how it started though. And it's so funny to look back and it's so easy to look now and go, oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah.
Like, but I can't believe I did that, but it's actually, yeah.
You just do what you have to do. And I was kind of living off adrenaline and every sale you jump for joy. I think I still jump for joy when we close a huge deal or do exciting things. Like I don't ever want to lose that excitement. I think when I lose that excitement is when I'll lose the love for it and maybe check out a little. But no, I'm still excited because we're still growing and changing and doing cool stuff. And with the perfumery, I feel like I'm in startup life all over again, where it's just absolute chaos in the best possible way. So I have this mature business with these mature brands, which have got their own struggles, to be quite honest, because, you know, they're heading into, they're now mature women and, you know, we now need to reinvent them. We need to, you know, start doing, get on TikTok and there's all these things.
You were the disruptor and now you're like, you're not an incumbent, but you're like, you got to watch out for other disruptors. Like, whereas with the perfumery,
yes,
it's like this.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I know. This new exciting baby.
Like, yes.
Yeah, it's so funny.
It's like you with your podcast. I know how passionate you love this podcast,
it's so,
Jane.
Yeah, it's so
because
fun.
It's new and it's fun and it's exciting. And Shopo is so exciting as well, but it's something different.
Looking at like smaller stats, but it's like exciting because it's just growing.
Oh, exactly. But you know I love a stat. We get aggressive growth numbers with the perfumery that we just don't get with Peppermint Grove and Moss Street anymore because of the stage it is, right?
Instant gratification.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're so good at branding and like you always have amazing imagery. How did you make the decision to start Moss Street? Like a sister, brother, sub-brand?
Yeah. Peppermint Grove is a really feminine brand. It's really feminine. It doesn't skew really young. It's sort of 35 plus, which is a really cool age group to target because they have high disposable income. You know, it's like our mums, you know, they go shopping, they're in these stores. And also the stores that I was in, a lot of the younger ones are obviously shopping online and doing that sort of thing. Whereas Peppermint Grove was really targeted to those beautiful boutique stores, which have an older demographic, right? Mm. So it was also at the time where there really weren't, candles were originally sort of something that, you know, women bought and women, and then it got to the stage where a lot of my guy friends were like, oh, can I have a candle or this or that? And I kind of was a bit like, oh, this kind of looks a little weird in your batch pad because it is quite a feminine product. So I wanted to develop a product that was quite unisex, like had really, was really contemporary, fine lines, was a bit edgy and cooler. So with that, I developed Moss Street, which actually the diffuser was based off like a Tom Ford Black Orchid cologne bottle. Like I wanted it to look like a bottle of cologne sitting on like maybe the kitchen bench of some guy in his backpack or whatever. That's how Moss Street came about. And then from there, I actually launched another brand, which was in these beautiful ceramics. But then it got to the stage where I was starting to brand and I was like, oh my gosh, I've now got too many brands. This is ridiculous. As we know, building brand identity it's time consuming. It's expensive. Yeah. Like it was just like, what am I doing? So I ended up rebranded the ceramics line under Moss Street Fragrances and it was the best thing we ever did. And that's a really like quirky, fun take. Like we say, you know, Moss Street is for like the real minimalist. And then you have like the playful ceramics for the maximalist. So they're like polar opposites of each other. Yeah. One's really, really fun and plays with design and others, you know, it's sleek and refined. But basically it was a different price point. So the contemporary is a lower price point to Peppermint Grove. The ceramics is a higher price point to Peppermint Grove. And then it was just completely different packaging as well and a completely different look. So that's kind of how it came about. And so I've ended up with these two brands that are so different, have their own brand identities, are stocked in some of the best retailers nationwide.
For me, it's like one's classic and one's modern. And it's like...
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, it's great.
Okay. And then so how did you go from the smaller boutiques, the independents, to getting like Maya, the big, you know, international boutiques?
Yeah. Really good question. So... Thank you. We were so incredibly lucky because Maya, when the brand was only, I'm going to say it was maybe a year old, we actually got a call from Maya. Now, at the time, I had a friend or somebody who worked at one of the big magazines who had given us a page in one of the magazines. And the buyer at Maya had actually seen it and reached out and said, look, we've seen your brand. We're looking to take on a new brand. Can we have a chat? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I flew to Melbourne for the meeting. I was so nervous. I'm a confident person, but when you're in this, like, you know, you're in your infancy stages, even now before a big meeting, like I had a meeting with a huge retailer in London last week, Thursday night, 10 o'clock at night. You know, I was nervous. I get nervous. Do you still get nervous for big meetings?
Yeah,
of course, like imposter syndrome is strong. But also, you know, you don't know what they're going to ask you or what they're going to want. It is personal, these things. Flew to Melbourne. I literally turned up and I turned up with my brand deck, which now I look at it, it's quite embarrassing, but bless. They were so kind. There was 8 of them in the room and me.
Oh, wow.
And when I get nervous, I talk even more. And so I just started talking and I actually even took out the photos of the demountable and I actually think they thought I was joking, like, but I wanted to show them like I'm just this young girl that's randomly living in a demountable in like an hour and a half away from home building this product, but I've got this product. It's really unique. It works. I was 12 months in and had like 100 retailers who were stocking the brand. And anyway, so we got chatting about it and they said, look, we'll let you know in a couple of weeks' time. They rang me the next day and they said, we really want to give you a go.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness, this is incredible. And I thought, oh, they might put it into their top. You know, they grade their doors. They have like 4 levels of stores. I thought, oh, maybe it'll go into the top 20. At that time, they had 65 stores and they put the brand into all 65 stores.
Wow.
They took 10 fragrances. So at the time, I just had large candles, mini candles, large diffusers. They took everything, they put it in and it just went gangbusters. And the other thing I did was for their first Christmas is I put in these engraving machines. So, and exactly what happened. So we put one
in. In store?
Yeah, in store.
Amazing.
So we put one in at Sydney City and they have their beautiful giftorium that they do.
Oh my God, yeah.
And we also put one in at Melbourne. And so it just went gangbusters because people were like, oh my God, I can actually have my name or my mum's name or happy 40th or whatever it is on this product. This is so cool. And so it got the hands into so many people that might not have like wanted to engage with a new brand, but they were like, hang on, I can have my name on it. This is so cool. Mm-hmm. And so from there, they bought it. They loved the product. And even when the engraving activation wasn't going on, they still wanted to buy the product because they'd fallen in love with it. So it kind of went from there.
Was that a big turning curve?
Huge turning point, but it was also a huge turning point in going, oh my goodness, I have to keep on top of my stock. But also I had to put a whole lot of software in. And that was when I first needed to take a loan because I had to invest in software. Like, you know, with Maya, all of the orders come through this thing called EDI. They do like auto stock replenishment on a Sunday where all the orders automatically go through.
You have to barcode. EDI. I still don't really know what it is.
Yeah, you have to barcode all the products. Like, so the time it takes to actually, like, you have to have men on the ground, like, you know, men and women on the ground to actually pack these orders because you have to barcode everything. You have to have the stock. Now they've even implemented this system where if you actually can't fulfill a certain rate of your orders, you get fined.
Oh,
you know, yeah. So you have to be ready for it. And that's fair. Like you have to be ready for it. So yes, it was a huge turning point, but it also opened up so many opportunities. One, internationally, because people were like, oh my goodness, you're stocked in Maya in all 65 stores. Incredible. People took us seriously, like we were a serious brand with a serious offering. And two, a lot of the other stores who, you know, might not have seen us were like, oh, what is this brand? Fantastic. And it was really organic. Like I built this thing on the smell of an oily rag, like quite literally. I didn't know social media. I didn't do social media. I didn't do any of that stuff. It was a distribution model only.
Wow,
it was purely done through the stores. They were my influencers out in the retail space who spoke to their customers and got them to buy the product.
Your social media, it's really new.
Really new, you've been doing it.
And then I have to just like give context, like getting to the majors these days, it's not easy, but it's easier because I think maybe since COVID or there's been a turning point where like the majors, like your Woolies and stuff, they realize they need to take on new fun brands when you were doing it
10 years ago,
it was tough. And Maya's probably one of the harder ones.
Yes,
to get
absolutely.
Into.
Yeah, exactly right. So the fact that they took me on was just incredible. And I am still just so incredibly grateful because it was the turning point. Like, absolutely. And it's just been incredible growth ever since. So from then we started moving into Bath and Body and bringing out limited editions and all of these capsule collections and doing all of this fun stuff. We've just, you know, we bring out with the brands, we bring out at least 100, 150 new products a year. Now, I know in fashion that's not a lot, but in our space, that's a lot. You know, we're bringing out that many products. It's incredible. And then with the perfumery, we're now at the stage where we have over 5,000 fragrances in our fragrance library. And we are now supplying the market with fragrance. So like a lot of my competitors, we're providing them with their fragrance.
Yeah, wow. Or
whatever, you know, and that's really cool. And some people think that's a bit odd, but you know, it just kind of made sense. There are not a lot of perfumeries in Australia. A lot of people got caught during COVID where they had supply issues because they couldn't get their fragrance from overseas.
Is this how you started? So this is the pivot point. We were both like calling each other being like, we're fucked.
Literally. I remember walking around my factory going, I am fucked. Because what happened was, is you've got to remember that. So it happened in March of 2020, right? So I had all of those bills that were due to be paid in March. So remember, I've sold lots over Christmas. And to give you an idea, in the last 3 months of the year, I sell more than the first 9 months of the year combined, right?
So all gifting.
Correct. So all of those invoices were due to be paid in that end of Feb, March. Like you're talking a serious amount of money, right? Yeah. And a lot of them went, sorry, we actually can't pay you. We had one supplier that went, oh, you know that invoice that we got in November, it was due 90 days EOM. Oh, we're just going to add another 90 days to it, you know?
Yeah.
Turns out that's not actually legal, but you know, people didn't have a choice, right? So I was monumentally effed, right? Monumentally effed. I am so blessed that I have the most incredible staff. I spoke with them all one-on-one. I explained the situation. We have this open door policy where everyone knows when the business is doing well and everybody knows when it's really tough. Like they know. And a lot of them said, we'll work for free. We'll do this. We'll do all these things. They were incredible. But also I was walking around the factory and quite literally I was like, this is it. Like I'm done. And I saw like our huge things of alcohol and I saw all of these vessels and I saw, and it was at a time when hand sanitizer, like nobody could get their hands on hand sanitizer. And I literally Googled, how do you make hand sanitizer? And I had the things that you needed to make it. No one could get ethyl alcohol and nobody could actually get bloody vessels or containers to put it all in. And I went, oh my God, we're going to actually make hand sanitizer. So my goodness, popped the old apron on. We made hand sanitizer and we weren't online at that time. We went online. I built this WooCommerce site. Oh my goodness. And in the first hour, we put hand sanitizer on. In the first hour, we sold $75,000 worth of hand sanitizer. Wow. And at that point, I was like, oh my God, I actually think we could have a way out here. And it's just, yeah, been amazing ever since. Yeah.
Oh my God. That is definitely like, that's incredible.
It's a bit rogue. Yeah.
Okay. And then how did you then move into the perfumery from there?
We actually did quite well over COVID. So it also then got to the stage where gift stores and that kind of thing, they started to sell online, like, and people were buying, like it was all about like,
they were at home.
Everybody was at home.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, treat yourself. I don't think I've ever bought so much skincare and makeup and everybody was spending money on themselves and all these things. So everybody started buying candles. Everybody started sending candles to their colleagues. Like, you know, it just went absolutely gangbusters. And I really feel for the industries that obviously really struggled, but we ended up doing really well over that period. I did have supply issues and I was like, I need to own as much of my supply chain as possible. And the opportunity came up to start this perfumery because I had the funds to do it. And I went, I'm going to do it. You know, a perfumer also at the time came to me and he was like, look, do you have something? I wasn't quite ready, but I just went, let's just pull the trigger and do it because there just aren't that many perfumers in Australia. And so, boom, it was like, let's do this. And the perfumery started. It was just supposed to be supplying my brands with the fragrance, but then other people wanted fragrance and that, the rest is history.
Yeah.
We're now supplying heaps of different businesses. There is fragrance in so many things. Cleaning businesses, you know, we've got contracts with these huge cleaning companies. You know, your laundry, I'm sure you do. Well, Jane, I don't think you do laundry, but does your laundry smell good? Do you ever smell your clothes and think, bloody hell, this smells? Exactly, right? So there is fragrance in so many things. So we're supplying so many different businesses with the fragrance that they then use in their end product.
What's the growth path for this business? Like, what's the challenges that come with it? I don't even know how this business works.
I know. You'll have to come out to the factory. So for me right now, it's actually keeping on top of stock. Like, it's actually being able to afford the growth.
What does stock look like? Is it gallons of like smelly liquid?
So the perfumery has probably 1,500 raw materials. They could be powders, liquids. There are so many different things that go into producing a fragrance, right? And the issue is if I don't have one of those ingredients, I cannot make a fragrance. But in this industry, like there might be one raw material that I need to buy a 20-foot container out of South America of that one material. And you could imagine they don't give me terms. So I need to pay cash for that one material, which is coming out of South America. I am buying a 20-foot container. And if I don't have it, I can't make the end product. Yeah. So for me, it's definitely keeping on top of the growth, the stock, like the inventory control. And again, it's just that cash flow side of things. And I also don't want to buy too much and then not be able to sell. Yeah. But then I also can't let my customers down. A lot of my customers have come across to me and to this business.
Because other people have let them
down. Correct. Mm. Because other people have let them down. Maybe they're not happy with the quality of the product. So I can't come and going, okay, cool. I'll have a 4-week turnaround. And next minute I've grown so fast that it's 16-week yeah. turnaround, and they go, well, why the hell did I come across to you in the first place? So that would probably be the biggest challenge that I've got in that business. And that's just normal startup stuff, right? Like keeping on top of stock and cash flow. Like it's normal startup stuff, but it is on quite a big scale parts. Because there's a lot of moving parts. My inventory team is incredible because sometimes I look at the raw materials sheet and the production sheets and the build sheets and my mind just blows because there's just so much going on.
It gives high barriers to entry.
Yes. Well, that's exactly it. And that's why this business is, yeah, she's a bit of a favorite of mine at the moment because of exactly that, high barriers to entry. It's a huge capital outset to set this up. The machinery and everything that you need is large scale.
You literally made lemonade with lemons.
Quite literally, yeah. I think. I'm pretty sure there's lemon in some of the stuff that we do, probably. Yeah.
What's the biggest fuck up you've made?
Oh, where do I start, Jane? Oh, there are so many. I make mistakes all day. I think you're doing something wrong if you're not making mistakes. And I'm such a perfectionist as well that I critique everything that I do, but I also have this thing where I'm like, stop trying to make everything perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Just get it out there and learn from it, right? So I think one of the biggest mistakes that I've made was I took my eye off the ball with inventory. And I actually ordered, like, we just had way too much stock, like to the point where I could have gone to the wall. It was really risky. I had to call in huge favors with two of my huge supplier, my glass manufacturing supplier and my packaging supplier. I've worked with them now for 11 years. They are incredibly loyal. I'm loyal to them. And I actually had to ring and say, can you give me an extra 6 months, which is just unheard of because I literally could not pay them. And if I did pay them, I wouldn't have been able to pay other suppliers. But because I had that fantastic relationship, I was able to lean on it. So it was letting my stock get out of hand. And that was probably the biggest mistake that I've made. Another mistake that I made was, because I'm happy to talk about my mistakes because we're all human and we make mistakes, was we do a lot of business in the UK. So we actually have a factory in the UK as well. So it is just a warehouse. Sorry, it doesn't actually make the finished goods, but we have a big warehouse there. We have a team there. Like it's a hugely growing part of our business, right? And what happened is so when the UK left the EU, they changed all of their legislation in regards to cosmetic products, and all of our washes and creams and anything that touches the skin is considered a cosmetic product. And basically you have to register all of your cosmetic products on this portal, right? Which was this EU portal. Well, when the UK left the EU, they decided we're going to be done with that portal. We're starting our own portal. They apparently sent a letter to some old office or whatever it was in the UK, didn't know anything about it. I had a 40-foot container turn up in the UK. It got pulled by customs, as it does. That's very normal. And they were like, cool, can you just send all your registration numbers for all of these cosmetics? I was like, yeah, cool, no worries. So send it all through. They're like, this isn't registered in our system. It was all registered in this EU system, which of course they'd shut down. And of course, in order to register, you need to do microbiological testing. Like there are all these things, preservative efficacy testing. Like it's a very complex process. And I went, oh my goodness, I know nothing about it. And to get it all registered is a 4-month process. So my container, if it doesn't get delivered, you pay what we call demurrage. Demurrage is very expensive. I ended up working with an incredible team there who allowed the goods to be delivered to my factory, but I just couldn't touch the products in question. And they allowed it to sit there for 4 months whilst I worked and night to get these products like registered so that they could legally be sold there. But it was a huge loss for me in terms of revenue. Yeah. I let down suppliers and it was a bloody stressful time, I tell you, because I ended up having to do it myself because all of the agencies that do it there in the UK had like 2-year waiting lists because everybody was in the same boat.
Oh my gosh.
So I did it myself.
There would be like a grace period.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bloody Brexit.
Yeah. So those are probably two, but I could talk all day about my stuff ups because there's been a lot and I make them all every day. I'm human.
Why do you think you've succeeded when so many have failed or don't reach that level or scale?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess you could say it's like anything with fashion businesses and all these sorts of things, right? I guess I always take it back to this, right? You take something like a candle, right? You walk into a shop, like there's a coconut and lime candle or a vanilla caramel candle, right? In Australia, we have pretty simple fragrances. You know, it's not like some parts of the world where they have quite complex fragrances. In Australia, we're quite simple with what we like in terms of our fragrance. Why is it that a customer buys your coconut and lime candle over somebody else's? Well, it might be the vessel that it comes in, right? It might be that they have the ability to personalize it. It might be the price point. It might be that it's stocked in Myer and Myer is 100 meters away. It might be that they have a great loyalty program online. You know, there are so many different things. So for me, I think it comes down to one, our packaging. Our packaging is so unique. Yes, there have been brands that have now bought out faceted vessels that are similar to ours. That's fine. But we were first to market in terms of that vessel. The personalization element is huge. People absolutely love that they can do that. Also, they love dealing with the brand. We have really great customer service. We pride ourselves on, you know, engaging directly with the consumer, making sure that everybody's always happy. We have great relationships with our incredible retailers as well. We try and keep things fresh in store in terms of our point of sale, in terms of gift with purchase promotions and really supporting them. Like, we're really grateful to our retailers. They're the ones who have built our brand in store. Like, we would have nothing without them. So I think people are quite loyal in terms of the fact that we treat them well. Like, it's a partnership. Like, it's really a partnership. And I think in wholesale, that's what it is. So I'd say those are definitely the main things. We've maintained being really affordable and we see ourselves as being affordable luxury. We're not too expensive that people feel like they're literally burning money when they light our product. They actually use it as an everyday product. It's a really nice price point for gifting as well. So I would say those are the main reasons why, you know, why we've been able to do what we've been able to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a bit of luck along the way. A sprinkle of luck. Yeah.
Okay. And then what's the best advice that you've received?
Okay. I know this seems probably silly, but the best advice I've received, and I know is if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And I think it's really good for in those times where things get tough and you're like, I just want to throw in the towel. This is all too hard. I just remind myself, like, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Why are you doing it? Why did you actually start? Just going back to basics, like, and just not getting ahead of myself, taking it back to basics. And I always say as well, you're selling candles, you know, you're not curing cancer. I wish I was curing cancer. I wish I was that intelligent. I'm not. But, you know, don't let it get on top of you. Just take it back to your basics. And that's what I do to get through those really tough times and those really stressful periods. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're not saving lives. It's not that deep. Yes. Just get on with it.
Correct.
You've got this.
Correct. And some people do like to get into the real deep of like da 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 da. But yeah, it's just not that deep. And the other thing as well is, like, I would say, don't forget to engage directly with your consumer. So many people create these fabulous products and they've been there in their office creating and doing all these things and they haven't actually shown it to anybody. Mm. You know, don't like show somebody.
That feedback loop is so important.
So important because sometimes you can get too close to it. Even now, I can often get way too close to my business and I just need to step back. I need to ask other people in the business, like they give me their honest feedback and also hire people that have a skill set that is different from you, right? I always want to be learning from my team. I don't know everything. Like, and I've never worked in a business of this size. I never have because it's scaled to a size that I've never worked in. So surround yourself with people that are better than you and that know more than you and that can teach you things.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
And circling back to your previous point, I feel like you and I are always the people like we'll go to a party and we'll be like, and we're like both there with these like big smiles. We're like, oh, everything at work is like just up in flames.
Yes.
Like, all this shit is falling apart.
Yes.
Let's have a drink. Yes. It's okay.
Yes.
And I think our like that positivity like is what's kept us going for like 10 plus
Absolutely. And people feed off that energy as well. I try to be really positive at work. Like, people don't want to work for someone that's like, oh, I'm so stressed. Yeah. Oh, so like, people don't want to, people want to be part of that energy and that vibe and that success story. Like, and of course, I'm like, oh, guys, shit's hit the fan today. We're having an absolute nightmare. But we have a positive attitude towards it, you know? Mm. And so as a result, people are like, yeah, it's not that bad. We'll get through it. And we always get through it as a team. Like, it's this real team culture of like, it's not that bad. We'll be okay. We're packaging candles. We're making people smell good. We're making their homes smell good. Life is not that bad. Yeah. We've got a beautiful, beautiful product that we're selling and putting it out there. Yeah.
You have a newborn.
I do. Well, he's not a newborn anymore, but I do have
newborn?
A baby.
Is that is he born the first year? I don't know. Oh, is he born 6 months? I don't know.
You know me, Jade. I'm not the most mumsy. I don't know mum questions. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I do have a newborn.
Maybe I'm wrong.
He's 7 months old.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
He's very cute. How are you balancing having this little like
baby.
Being responsibility whilst with everything?
It's honestly fine. I think there's a few things. I'm very lucky in that I have a lot of help. So my husband actually took 12 weeks off work to help me. We also have an incredible nanny. She is amazing. She's part of the family. She's incredible. But I also have a very good baby. I know you're not meant to say that, but he is the biggest cheller. He sleeps, he eats. Like, so, and I also think as well, I kind of like organized chaos. Like, his name's Freddie. He's added to my life. I can't wait for more. I don't get that overwhelmed or stressed with these things. He's just added to my life. Now, I might have a second one and it's a very different story, but for now, I just am managing. I'm quite organized, which with my personality, it wouldn't seem that way, but usually, like, I am OCD at home, OCD organized. I just have to be organized with things and I'm really enjoying it.
What are the things that you do for yourself to help you stay focused and motivated?
Okay, two things. I go to the gym. I'm a gym girl. I lift
weights.
I don't
know where this came from. All of a sudden, you used to never go to the gym and now it's like your thing.
It's my thing. It's my me time. I literally put my watch on do not disturb and it is my hour for me. Nobody can talk to me. Nobody can want anything. I lift weights. It just makes me feel incredible. Like the endorphin rush is incredible. It's my me time. So I do that. I listen to podcasts. I have a lot of driving time because obviously driving out to the factories. So I always make sure I listen to a podcast. I used to make lots of calls. I still do sometimes, but for now I'm like, no, I'm going to listen to the news or I'm going to put on a fun podcast. Those are definitely my two things. And then I just love to go out with my girlfriends, as you know, love to go out and have a good time, let my hair out. Those are the things that I do for me.
Hit me with your two truth and one lie. And I'm going to kick myself if I don't get this.
This is so hard because I need to tell appropriate stories.
Well, I already know all your inappropriate stories, so it's probably like, there's
all
probably
right.
no
we'll
point.
Keep it then. Okay, then it's not going to be anything too rogue. The first one is I once threw up in a snorkel while diving with sharks. I lived in 5 different cities before the age of 10.
I feel like I should know this.
Are you struggling?
Bad friend. I feel like you've thrown up in the snorkel. But okay,
excuse me, I haven't finished.
Oh, I know.
And the other one is that I
forgot. The next one's fake. He's making it this next
one. Oh my god! Damn it! Oh my gosh, you know me too well. Okay, the other one was a lie. Damn it! I stuffed it up. We have to do it again.
Yay.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jay. See, it's too hard. I can't make up a lie in front of you. Know I can't lie, Jay. Yeah. So like lying in front of my friend, I can't do
it. I should
have
just made it 3 fun facts.
Yes. Oh my God. 3 fun facts would have been better because I couldn't look you in the face and lie to you. Like it was just too awkward.
Oh my God. This is so fun.
Thank you so much, Jane. I really appreciate you showing your platform and I know I need to do more of this stuff. It's so incredibly
fun.
God.
I've been, ever since I know Hannah, I'm like, you got to get out there. You got to do more PR. You're such a great face of the brand. You love talking. Like,
I know. I don't know why I don't do it, but I'm going to. Okay. That is my goal for this year. And that is why yes, I'm doing this podcast. This is going to kick it off.
This is going to like.
This is it.
Skyrocket things.
There we go. I'm going to ride on your coattails and be like, okay, guys, now I do interviews and stuff.
Have you met my friend?
Yeah. Have you met my friend Jane Lou? You might have heard of
Oh my God. Okay, so
yes,
leave us with your advice for your younger self.
Don't forget who you are. Like, stay true to yourself. Never compromise on your morals and values. Work hard. Have fun. Just enjoy what you do. If you're not loving it, stop. Like, love everything that you do. Like, be passionate about what you do. And if you're not doing that, then do something else. But if it feels right, go with it. Trust your gut.
Love it.
Thank you, Jane. Woo-hoo!
Yay! Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.